Welcome to the Social Podcast with your hosts, Jess Allen and Lainey Louie. Today on the show, Crown Jewel Controversy. Should the royal family return the world's largest diamond following the Queen's death? Then, we debate who should and shouldn't be giving marriage advice to single friends. Plus, celebs clash over Adam Levine, why the cheating allegations have Hollywood divided, and Brad Pitt unveils a new luxury skincare line. But you won't believe how old he was when he started washing his face. It all starts now on The Social Podcast.
Welcome to The Social. Listen, Melissa and Cynthia are away today, and we have journalist Andrea Bain filling in. She's blowing up our TikTok, you guys. Her and Concho and Lefty, it's incredible. Hey, we're also really excited to welcome back comedian Cassie Cow to the panel. It's really great to have you.
Thank you.
Shall we dig right into it? Let's not waste time. Let's do it. Okay, so since Queen Elizabeth's death, there have been growing calls for the royal family to return the world's largest diamond to South Africa. So this diamond, it sits on Queen Elizabeth's scepter and was gifted to King Edward VII in 1907 after it was discovered in a South African mine. Mm. It's estimated to be worth a cool $400 million. Whoa. So this is an interesting talk, but Cassie, is the time to talk about this sort of thing, is it appropriate for right now? What do you think? Should we be having these conversations?
I mean, I think 122 years is too soon, you know? Yeah, I think it's rude, honestly. I don't know. I feel like that the debate around this is so funny to me. Like, it's kind of like if I stole something from your house and then I took it to my house and then I had a really big guard dog in front of it for 122 years. And then the day that my guard dog dies, we're like, it's rude. It's rude. We have to give it a minute. That is a wonderful analogy. That is a wonderful analogy. When you put it like that.
Wow. Wow. So in this analogy, is the guard dog Queen Elizabeth?
I mean, she's the one holding the jewel, right?
Yeah, holding the scepter.
Well, I mean, I think that you're bringing up a great point. Like, what is the appropriate amount of time? Because I think that everybody was looking at Queen Elizabeth, and she's had this history, and she was really old, right? Mm-hmm. 96 is not young. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there was respect shown to her. Like, let's not upset her. And, you know, and then, but now she's gone, and they wasted no time. Mm-hmm. And it's not just South Africa, Antigua and Barbuda, like, even before the funeral, 3 days after her death, we're like, hey, guess what? We don't want to be part of your party anymore. We're exiting. We don't want you as the monarchy. And so there, it shows you that there are people around the world who've been waiting.
Mm-hmm. They've been waiting. So would this not be a genius PR move for King Charles?
That's what I'm thinking. If I'm their
given
PR,
that, yeah,
right? And it's so funny. So I covered the Queen's death for the 10 days. It was a very long period. And we talked to a lot of experts. And a lot of people were bringing up these conversations. And a lot of people were like, let's just wait. Let's bury her first. Let's have the processions. Let's do everything. And then we'll have these discussions. And if I'm Charles's PR, first of all, let's address the issues that everybody has. No one thinks that Charles is going to have the same impact that his mother did. Although people are receptive during the funeral, so we'll have to wait and see about that. But he also knows, and everybody, there's transparency with this new generation. They know what's going on. They know what you guys have done. So what are you going to do? Are you going to continue to pretend you didn't steal those things? Mm-hmm. And you don't have the head of some Kenyan leader in the basement somewhere? Or are we going to, I think after their mourning, because the royal family still has a 7-day period of mourning, which isn't over yet. Mm-hmm. Once they're done that, the coronation for King Charles III is not until next summer. I think in that time, he should have one-on-one meetings with all of the Commonwealth leaders who are like, you know what, we want out, or we want our things back, we want our jewels back, we want everything back. Private meetings, right? Find out where, meet everybody where they're at, have a very honest and open conversation about how it's gonna be done. And then after your coronation and we do all, you know, the horns and the dogs and the horses and everybody in their uniform, the first thing you do the very next day is say, this is how we're going for it as a royal family. And I think that's the only thing that will save the monarchy to go forward. Because I look at little George and Louis and Charlotte, I'm like, will you guys still get all of this fanfare? Yeah. Because I don't think people are going to care as much, but this is a way to do it. Address the issue. Talk to everybody, give things back. You don't need the jewel. You don't need any of those things, but you do need to continue and you do need to move forward.
I totally agree. My question though is like, I hear you. That sounds really reasonable and in a reasonable world.
Yes.
Oh, it's gonna, your script that you just wrote in.
Was that good?
Yeah, it was so good.
Wouldn't you pay me a lot of money for that?
The movie is gonna go exactly according to script.
But here's the thing, the jewel, let's talk about the jewel, because it just occurred to me, as you said, the jewel is in the scepter.
Yeah.
So as we all saw during the funeral, if you were paying attention, they made a whole big deal. There's the crown, the scepter, and the ball.
Yeah, like, the crown jewels.
They're part of the crown jewels. Yeah. They represent the monarchy itself.
Yeah.
Right? The monarch owns or gets to hold those things during the coronation. Mm. They do this big pose, the crown, the ball, the scepter, and the, whatever. And that is the symbol. Anointed by God. Anointed, like this is the divine right for this person to sit on the crown. If you take a piece of one of the symbols of the divine right out of the thing, then what's the divine right?
I would have any value. I would argue that nobody's confused about the value of the monarchy right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Although I think personally, I think your plan is really great. To me, I think Prince Charles is so old and way too tired to execute all of that. I mean, like, how many meetings are we talking about? He needs to nap.
No,
he's the oldest monarch to take the crown.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I get it. He probably has 2 weeks left on there. I just think let's throw a party, get some disco lights in there, invite all the heads of state, let them pick out what they want to do. We'll just reshuffle them a little bit, meet again.
That's also a good plan.
I don't even know if it's King Charles's decision though to actually give them back. Because if I'm not a royal historian, if you are, please let us know. Because the crown jewels themselves, they belong to the monarchy, but they don't, like Charles, as Charles, if he's a pedestrian, he doesn't own them. It belongs to the head of state. And the idea is that the crown jewels are held in trust for the nation. So I don't think King Charles can just go ahead and do it.
But yeah,
like, it would be like a, would
but
it be a parliamentary?
Stolen, but now here's the deal, it doesn't
parliamentary
matter,
what?
A parliamentary vote? Like to be like, let's talk about this?
Probably.
Because I think if Charles tried to do it, they, like everyone would be like, whoa, bud. Those are technically not
yours. Yeah, but who are we kidding?
Yours.
Like, the Minister of Transportation isn't waving around the scepter. Like, I mean,
I'm just saying it's probably a little more complicated than we think. And it's more complicated because, yes, a blood diamond. How far are we going to take this with reparations? I'm not saying this is wrong, but I'm sure some of us have some family heirlooms. Are we going to give those back? You know, like it gets
tricky.
I don't
feel like it has to be more complicated than how they took them in the first place.
That is a great.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah.
There you go. Okay, yeah. I'm sure we're going to be talking about this for a long time. Or, well, according to Cassie, only 2 weeks.
That's generous.
So let's move on. Someone wrote to the Washington Post advice columnist, and they asked, if a married person can offer advice to their single friends.
Yeah. Okay, well.
I'm about to make some enemies in this room.
Andrea.
Because I am the resident. Cassie, you're single too, right?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. That was a long yes, but okay. we'll discuss later in the commercial break. As a single person, I have been given relationship advice from unsolicited people, bus drivers, aunties, at weddings, in workplaces, during meetings. And I'll tell you something. My experience has been the people who have the most miserable relationships are always the ones with the most advice. If it's a misery loves company type of situation, but I just feel like, why don't you just let me be me and let me do me and figure it out on my own, just as you figured it out on your own. And the advice is going to be, there's no one piece of advice for everybody because everybody's relationship starts differently. Everybody's relationship has a little bit more intricacy. And I understand it's coming from a place of love. You want to see me walk down the aisle and you think that's going to make me happy and all that jazz, which is, that's a whole other discussion. But I really feel like people, we're in a time, and I even wrote a book about it. They're in a time where we should just let people live their lives and do what they want to do and not badger, especially if this person didn't ask you. If I ask you for marriage advice,
that's the thing.
Then by all means, if I just got married and I'm like, how do I do this? Please, by all means. But if you see me enjoying myself looking good in my cobalt blue pants, please keep it moving. Please. Miss me with that.
Cassie, you have a beautiful mauve sweater on.
Oh,
please.
I mean, I don't know that I have this level of confidence that Andrea brought to this. I just think what's wrong with this scenario is that people who are married love to lie about how happy they are. And this is mostly an issue of, like, nobody wants advice from happy people, especially if you're putting it on and I can see right through you. If I'm unhappy, the way to cheer me up is to tell me how bad your husband is at, like, loading the dishwasher. That would make my day. I would be like, you're right, I don't have to deal with that at all. I don't have some random man messing up my house. It's great. Yep.
That's a true friend.
If you want to be a good friend, tell me how bad your life is.
Lainey, what do you think? Do you get asked for a lot of advice from single friends?
I don't think I do get asked for a lot of advice. I mean, I get asked for... Friends disclose things to each other. We vent. Mm-hmm. So, of course, I've been a receptor of venting, and I vent as well. But I generally, I don't really give advice, because how would I? First of all, I have been cheated on, and I am a cheater. I have been a cheater. Oh. I have also encouraged people to cheat on their husbands. So, I don't think anybody should be, you know, asking me for advice. I probably am not what someone considers to be a very good moral person. I don't have a very good character.
I appreciate the honesty.
And these are extenuating circumstances, what I'm saying is. So, you know, I'm not going to, like, you know, put everybody on blast. But there are extenuating circumstances. And I understand, as you said, the intricacies of everybody's relationship are different.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So the only advice I ever give is marriage is really hard.
Yeah.
It's so hard. Yeah.
Which
is that what you want to do? It is so hard. Yeah.
I will say the one thing is, it makes me think, have I ever asked anybody who's in a relationship for advice? And I can't think of anyone whose relationship I'm like, I want that one. Yeah. When you're single,
so hard.
Look, when you're single, the mentality isn't like, how do I get what everyone else gets? You're like, I think I can get a thing that no one else is figuring
out. Yes.
You're like, I'm trying to do something better than what you're doing.
Yeah. I love it. True. I love it. This is so perfect, because on the other side of this break, guess what we're talking about? Just the latest on the Adam Levine cheating scandal, rocking the headlines. Can't wait to see what Lainey has to say about that. Find out what celebs are saying as well about the alleged affair.
You're listening to The Social Podcast on the iHeartRadio Canada Network. Still to come, find out which ex Brad Pitt is gushing about. Plus, it's a trip down memory lane as we revisit our favorite teen movies. Stick around. You're listening to The Social Podcast on the iHeartRadio Canada Network. Download the show wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And make sure to catch The Social weekdays at 1 p.m. on CTV.
Welcome back to The Social Podcast. I'm Jess Allen alongside Lainey Louie, journalist Andrea Bain, and comedian Cassie Cow. So what did we promise? We promised the Adam Levine cheating scandal, didn't we? Just keeps growing. So after Instagram model Sumner Stroh exposed their alleged year-long affair, more women came forward saying Adam slid into their DMs with dirty messages. And now celebs like Sarah Foster and Emily Ratajkowski are clashing over who's in the wrong. Mm. So Sarah said on TikTok, oh my God, that women need to do better and not get involved with married men. Emily fired back, asking why we blame women for men's mistakes. Especially when there's a power imbalance at play. So here's what we want to talk about. Do you agree with Sarah or Emily? Andrea, what do you think?
Why you go to me first? Got so much to say. You know what? I'm on the line about this. I don't think... you're right. If Adam made a commitment to Bahati, that's who the commitment is with, and he should never break those vows. He's married to her. They have a family. And entertaining these women is disgusting, and it's wrong, and he knows it's wrong. On the other hand, this woman, the one thing... There's a couple things that Sumner said that I really, like, took a little bit of an issue with. First of all, I felt like, and she wasn't being completely honest about it, there was a little bit of ego in it when she was describing, yeah, I've been having an affair with a man who's married to a Victoria's Secret model. Bahati does a lot of modeling, but you specifically talked about you got a Victoria's Secret model's husband.
Yeah.
And I felt like there was a little bit of her ego kind of going like, can you imagine, like, I'm so pretty that I got a Victoria's Secret model's husband?
Yeah.
That's what it felt like to me, and I didn't like that part of it. Also, there's a lot of talk about, oh, she's in her 20s. This is what Radikowski was saying. She's in her 20s, and, you know, this guy's much older. And I really am not a fan of letting people in their 20s off the hook for behavior that they know is wrong. I don't know why 21 means that you don't have the facility to say, I don't want to have sex with you, married man. Please go away. Get out of my DMs.
Yeah.
I was in my 20s. I did not mess with anybody's husband. Mm-hmm. Not on purpose. I didn't know what happened. Because I didn't knowingly do that. And it's one of those situations where those are the two things about it that are bothering me a little bit. And I think that's why she's getting that backlash. Because it's like, you could have said no. You could have exposed this guy a long time ago. But you did it for a year.
How do you know? You just said unknowingly. And I think what happens a lot of the time is that celebrities, these men, famous or not, will say, we're no longer together. We're separated.
It's not hard to figure out that Adam and Bahati are still together. They're two famous people.
Yeah. There is actually a chain of this. Mm. Bahati and Adam featured their home in Architectural Digest around the time that Sumner and Adam were hooking up.
Okay.
They also put their place on sale.
Oh. So that doesn't mean anything.
It does mean something.
I
mean,
like, another house.
But here's the thing. If you're 21, to go back to this, if you're 21 and a very famous person who you are glamorized by is now coming on to you, flattering your ego.
Okay, yes.
And then saying to you, yes, but I've left my wife or not, we're not working anymore.
Okay, wait.
I would not be,
can you call him
weak?
Can you call him anytime? Can you go to his house? Can you be in his car? Can you leave your hair anywhere?
Yes.
Probably not, because your wife's around.
They were seeing each other.
I know, but you're not.
See, the texts were.
Are you around his kids?
I just want to say, like,
Cassie, what do you? I don't know.
This whole like line of reasoning feels very like she just turned 18 last week. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think it's fine. Like, I don't think that you have to. Also, on my side, I'm like very happy to feel like they're both bad people. I don't think we have to choose one. You know?
Yeah. There's no perfect victim in this.
I think if we want to be a real feminist, we should let women be just as bad as men. I mean, if they're gonna do bad things, I think we can let them. I also agree with you, Andrew. When in her TikTok, she really loved to say that she was really manipulated. She said that a couple times, and I'm like,
manipulated on your back every single time for a year.
How are you manipulated
for a year? I'm not.
Okay, let me pull this out a bit. But because what the question was, do we agree with Sarah, Emily? I have a question for them. Mm. We just talked about unsolicited advice and how stupid that is. What is Sarah and Emily doing chiming in on this story? Why are they? And, you know, in some of their TikToks, they were accusing, what's our friend's name? The influencer, Sumner, accusing her of maybe wanting to get attention. What the heck are you calling what you're doing by posting your opinion about this that no one asked for?
Giving us content.
But you know, just be careful.
You know what I think it
you're
is?
Calling the kettle black, whatever that is, pineapple. Yeah.
I think
stone
what's
houses.
Happening there is a little bit of, have you ever been cheated on?
Yes.
Right? It's a little bit of a trigger when you hear these types of stories, right?
Yeah.
Once you see it, you're just like, sends you back to that place where you got confronted and this girl's telling you all the business. It's like, oh, well, your bed looks like this and he called me there and all of these things, which has happened to me. And it's like, it's a trigger. So I think that these two women are going at each other because you're triggered. Whereas Emma, she just got cheated on by her husband. That's why she's in the middle of a divorce.
But
and
she's
the other
not
one,
attacking the other women. She keeps it to the husband. And that's the thing. She is not naming, shaming, or like Instagramming any of the women that her husband cheated with.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying those two women are going at each other because I think they're triggered. There's something that happens to you emotionally when you're betrayed that way. And I think that's all that we're seeing. And plus, TikTok is just a messy place where we like to just like into it.
I find it hard to believe that so many women find Adam Levine attractive.
I know. I was going to say, it's so embarrassing to try to get involved in this story. Like, I would want as much distance from this, like, sad loser. Like, No. I'm serious. If you go on the TikToks and you look, people have clipped out, like, little bits of how he sexts, and it's so embarrassing. It's like, he's like a 15-year-old. It's, like, really sad, and I just, like, and, this, like, sad man with the neck tattoo. Like, I don't know. You just, don't want so much.
It's the California across the sternum for me.
It's
all
very,
in the past. Thank you.
very embarrassing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, so we're moving on now. So the movie Due Revenge, starring Camila Mendes and Maya Hawke, has a lot of people feeling nostalgic for great 90s hits like Clueless or Cruel Intentions. So I am curious, ladies, what is your favorite teen movie?
I can't pick one. Like, but I,
really?
I love them all, but I mean, I would like to name check Cruel Intentions.
Yeah, that's a great
one.
Yeah.
That is a good one.
I would like to name check Ferris Bueller's Day Off. That made, it was just a bad smart boy, and he made me want to be a bad smart girl.
I also can't pick one, but because I hate them all.
Oh, no. Do you really? All of them?
I'm sorry, they're all so unreal. Oh, I'm sorry, they're all about 35-year-olds pretending to be sophomores. Oh, I'm sorry, they're so all white 35-year-olds who've got 5 o'clock shadows.
Oh, my God.
Every once in a while, we'll throw in a racist character off to the side. Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm so nostalgic.
On that note, I'm not going to name my movie now. Either. They're dumb. Right, Cassie?
I mean,
friendship. All right.
Still to come on The Social Podcast. What's the key to a successful relationship? According to a new survey, men are happier when they think they're the funnier partner. Hilarious or no laughing matter? We discuss. You're listening to The Social Podcast on the iHeartRadio Canada Network. Download the show wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And make sure to catch The Social weekdays at 1 p.m. on CTV.
Welcome back to The Social Podcast on the iHeartRadio Canada Network. You've got me, Jess Allen, and Lainey Louie coming at you. So, Melissa and Cynthia are away, but we have journalist Andrea Bain back with us today. Thank you very much. Please welcome comedian Atsuko Okatsuka.
Yeah. Oh my God. You got that.
We're delighted to have you here with us today. Let's dive in. Because it turns out that Brad Pitt has become somewhat of a beauty buff. The actor recently announced his own skincare line called Le Domaine and told Vogue magazine that the products are made up of genderless skincare essentials. So in the interview, he gushes over his ex-wife, Paltrow. Mm-hmm. You may remember her, the founder of the beauty empire Goop, saying that he loves what she's done with her own brand. He even says that she was the first person to get him to wash his face twice a day. Okay, Brad. Okay. So, Atsuko, what's your...
thinking?
What's your reaction?
That was the first person?
That was the first person. I don't blame you for being stuck
on that. Is
that
why they broke up? Well... my gosh, as a grown person, you know what I mean? She was the first person. You should have stayed.
Yeah.
Okay. And now he's back, okay, with a skincare line. Yeah, yeah. I get genderless. I don't care as long as it's like whoever it's for, how it works, is it affordable?
Oh, I like that.
Right? Yeah.
You feel like maybe things have gone off the tracks with prices on that?
Oh, if it's really pricey.
It's not drugstore prices, I
know. Oh, then it's like, then you keep it, Brad.
Yeah.
Thank you. Keep it, Brad. Well, you know what I mean? Like, that's all I care about. Mm-hmm. You know, relatability. Well, okay, what's not drugstore prices?
I like, think I saw something like 80 euro for a...
Ooh.
Okay.
Oh, that's expensive.
That is expensive.
It's expensive.
Okay, all right. And then for
I mean, it's like these designer skincare brands, they don't come like with the big bottle and the pump.
The tub.
Right?
Which is the way we like it.
Yeah. It's like you use your pinky nail.
Yeah, yeah.
You're supposed to do a little dollop and then just under the eye. Right. Yeah.
And there goes $30 every time you put it on.
Yeah, exactly. After you've used it, there goes your rent for the whole month.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm worried about. You know what I mean? And then what? Who do you look like after? What's the guarantee?
Maybe Brad Pitt? I don't know.
Like would you?
I mean, if they could bottle that, I don't know. What do you guys think?
Listen, I'm not a huge fan of celebrity-endorsed skincare products, mainly because, well, what do you know about skincare? You sing, you dance, and now all of a sudden you're supposed to tell me how I'm supposed to clear up my skin and look younger? I also don't believe that they're completely transparent with us about what they do to look that good. You can't convince me, Rihanna and J-Lo and Kylie, that you don't go to some expensive spa and get all the snail and whatever they do to their faces, you know, and injectables, you leaving that stuff out. You cannot convince me that you're using your own products and that's why you look that good. So that's my first issue. But there are two things that Brad did that I really didn't like. First of all, he talked about Gwyneth a lot and the success of Goop, which is, to me, it's like, okay, so you're saying that you want to make money. You're looking at Gwyneth like, oh, you made all this money with Goop. That was really good. I want to do that, which is the reason we don't trust them, right? And then the second thing, he was like, he talked about the fact that celebrities back in the day, it was not cool to align yourself with a brand because it wasn't really cool. And now because of the hip hop guys, which is translation.
That's what he said.
He said that, which is translation. When I hear that, I hear black people. Right? So now we made it cool. So now he's doing it. And I think he missed a huge opportunity. What people don't know is Brad used to have a lot of acne on his face.
Yeah.
I used to have a lot of acne as well. I went on two very strong medications and he had missed an opportunity to market this product. Like, look, I had bad acne and I was an A-list guy who was on the big screen. I had to clear up my face. This is what I did. Here are the steps of what I did to look good. Now buy it. That I would have bought. This, this talking about Gwyneth's success. What is this? What is this?
And the hip hop guys.
And the hip hop people.
He's like, you know, it's like hip.
Yeah. It was ridiculous. So
it's cool
I'm
now because you know hip hop like Gwyneth. You know,
when we think hip hop, we always think Gwyneth. Right?
That sentence doesn't go well together. Also, like, you shouldn't have admitted. It's hard to, you know, if you want an inspiration, right? Someone who's like, look at my skin here. You don't want a person who just admitted they didn't know how to put lotion on.
Thank you.
Right? That's a really good point.
Like, I didn't know till I was 35. You know,
to wash my face.
Yeah.
Even though I had bad acne for a very long time and got it cleared up.
Totally.
Skip that part. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, like, he is like Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
And lots of people see him as the quintessential movie star for many years. And the, like, that model of movie star where all American, very attractive, tanned. I understand why he would be chosen or he would choose himself to say, do you want to look like me? Here, let me show you. The problem is he isn't showing us. Like, you listed all those people. I understand. Oh, it's a cash grab. Like, Rihanna. J-Lo, even Gwyneth Paltrow.
Kylie.
But at the very least, they're doing more than the bare minimum. I see these people hustling on YouTube and on Instagram all the time. They're using their products. They're lathering their face. They're touching it. They're saying, I use it morning and night. He, in this interview with Vogue to promote this product, they said to him, okay, are we going to get a demonstration? He's like, no, I'm not doing that. Okay, so you won't even work. You won't even work to get my money, right?
Yeah.
Later on, they're like, okay, well, share your skincare regimen with us. He doesn't answer the question. So I'm like, you won't even pretend to want to work very hard to hustle me out of my money.
Yeah.
Why do I want to give you all that money? Not drugstore prices, but all that money. Like, I at least want you to pretend to care about me and to want to show me what you're doing. So he's lazy, greedy, lazy, greedy, and a liar. Cause you know, we don't know what products you're, why am I going to put my check into you? Like into your bank account.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Hey. So true.
I think we've taken care of that, but you know, good luck with Le Domaine, Brad Pitt. I'm sure you need the money. Next, who do you think was funnier in their relationship, Brad or Gwyneth? It's like a tough quest. Like, neither one. Well, there's a new study. There's a new study that surveyed 150 couples to determine the role that humor plays in their relationship, and the results, they brought a lot of LOLs. And I found that men tend to be happier in relationships when they think that they're the funnier one. Oh. Yeah. What do we think of this? Does it matter to you if you are funnier than your partner?
Well, you know, it's so funny. I have a very good friend. His name is Alonzo Bowden. He's a comedian. He lives in LA. And you know what he told me? Yeah, he's hilarious. He told me straight up, he was like, I could never date a woman who was funnier than me. And I was like, really? He said he refuses. It doesn't matter. He's never going to date someone funnier than him. And this article just made me think about, there's like a dog whistle thing that happens with single women. You know, when you read a lot of the relationship books and listen to the podcast, they're always telling women, if you want a man, what you need to do is don't be as strong. You know, don't open the jar. Let him open the jar.
Right.
If you make more money, don't pay for dinner. Let him pay for dinner. And this article saying that men are happier when they think that they're funnier. So that means if I'm hilarious, I gotta, again,
dim
my light so that you can be okay. And the question I have, are we trying to date a man or are we raising a little boy? Because
Wow.
If you're a man, you should be fine that I'm funnier than you, right? I don't want to have to dim my light.
Yeah. We figured it out.
Well, you're a professional comedian.
Yeah. Like, so I was going to say, maybe it's a little different because Alonzo is a comedian, so he's kind of screwed if, you know.
Yeah.
Me too. If my partner is funnier and everyone in interviews is saying, like, God, Atsuko's husband, he's so funny. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
We went to see her show, but after the show, we talked to her husband, and he
killed
it. Man, like, I asked for his signature. You know what I mean?
So
as comedians, we are like, you know, we hope to be the funnier one. Or else it's, you know, that's, there goes our career, right?
Yeah, true.
But is humor in a partner important for you?
Oh, 100%, yeah. But, you know, it's not like, you know, who's funny. My husband's very funny. He's very witty. And, like, I get to run my jokes by him. So I have this very lucky thing, you know. Mm-hmm. But the men being happier because of course they are. They're happier if they think they're richer, too. And they think they're hotter than they are. You know, it's about, like, maybe just, like, it's about maybe manipulating him to think that he's these things, you know, like, oh my God, honey, that is so funny.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And it's also not authentic. You're not being your true self.
Did they interview the women?
That's what I'm curious about, if the reverse is true, because humor is really important in my relationship. But I wonder if it's because we both think we're the funnier one. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Not just my partner's argument. But who knows? Like, that is, it's important.
Is it a competition?
It's never a competition, I think, because we both already know that we've won. Uh-huh. You know?
Yeah. Okay, got it.
And leaving that be. Totally.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Well, that was a lot of fun, wasn't it? That was a lot of fun.
Up next on The Social Podcast, would you go to work wearing club wear? We debate appropriate office attire after the break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Next week on The Social, we examine the state of nursing in Canada to see if it's on life support. Plus, fall fashion trends that are worth the splurge. And how to make sauerkraut. The Social, weekdays at 1 p.m. on CTV.
Welcome back to The Social Podcast with Lainey Louie, journalist Andrea Bain, comedian Atsuko Okatsuka, and me, Jess Allen. Here's a question for you. Would you wear your club clothes to a corporate job?
No!
Okay, but according to Gen Z, some of them, it's totally fine. Take a listen.
I swear, if I had a corporate job, this is how I would go dress to work. Like, who's going to stop me?
Who's going to stop you? That's an important question.
I don't know. Who is going to stop you?
We're opting for short hemlines and sheer tops at their 9-to-5 jobs. So does this type of clothing belong in the office? What do you think?
You know, I was just watching the video and thinking, my gosh, my top is really high up. for
daytime TV.
Yeah. And I was like,
we need to tuck in your mic wire.
That's the issue. No, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know what, depends on the job, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, what is it? Is it WeWork? You know?
Yeah.
Like, are you there? Are you, you know, you made your own business? Do you own, is it an Etsy store? That's your own thing?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
True. Yeah.
I mean, how high would you go here?
One of our colleagues, Melissa, isn't here today, but she tests the limits every day. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we love her for it, actually.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
We love
her for it. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Here's the deal. God bless this girl. Who's going to stop me? I'll tell you who's going to stop you. You're going to stop you from getting any promotions, being taken seriously, anybody listening to you. And in the corporate world, there's a name for this. It's the CLM. Career Limiting Move. You want to show up? It's your choice. If you want to show up half naked and have your left areola out and you think that you're also going to be taken seriously in that promotion that's coming up, that they're going to really look to you, go for it, sweetheart, because there are women who are still fighting. We are still, as women, fighting in the workplace to be paid equally, to be treated well, and that's with everything covered up. So if you think you're going to come with your outfit, and you're, who's gonna stop me? Go for it. And, you know, I understand, like, we can push the limits. I'm a news anchor. Like, I have to wear a certain conservative look that I have to have, but I get to push the limits a little bit. So mm-hmm. I wish that it wasn't so like, who's going to stop me? And more like, we've come a long way and we can do things that women 30 years couldn't do. Right. And I also think about women like this. There's a woman by the name of Balsama St. John. She's a CMO. She's a marketing genius. And I also thought about Serena Williams, two women who have a dress code in different types of conservative workplaces, right? Where they have pushed the limits. But look at these two women, right? Mm-hmm. Balsama will go to do a keynote speech in that outfit. But here's the key. She is at the top of her game. She is the smartest person. She has proven herself with success at Apple Music, Uber. There's a company that she's done really well at. And of course, Serena, you have 23 Grand Slams. You can wear whatever you want.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sure, so, this idea that you're just showing up in whatever you want to wear, go for it. You're going to put the spoke in your own wheel.
I totally agree. Showing up in whatever you want to wear, wearing like club clothes to the office, that tells you something. Every time we're wearing something, it's telling everyone else something. And it's saying, you know what? I'm not going to follow social conventions. Good for you. But you know what? I sometimes like social conventions.
Mm-hmm.
Like think about like it takes out a lot of stress of a situation. Heaven forbid you have a funeral to go to. What am I going to wear? Probably something black rather than a bikini. I'm going grocery shopping. What am I going to wear? I'm not going to put on the ball gown today, even though I don't have one yet. I'm going to probably wear t-shirts and jeans. But to your point, I do think social conventions have the potential to have a huge amount of impact. For example, the women you just mentioned, like women, black women who can wear their hair curly rather than straightening it. That has a huge impact and a huge influence on people. Or if we think about women in Iran right now who are taking off their headscarves, that not only has a huge impact, that is potentially putting their lives on the line. Mm-hmm. But wearing wearing club attire to the office, I don't know if it has the impact they think it does. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, I think it's just where you want to focus.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, do you want to, you know, is it a job where, like, my words matter? You know, I think about that when I do stand-up, you know? Okay, if I'm going to wear an outfit that's, like, too flashy, maybe they're looking at the things dangling from my clothes, you know?
No, it's true.
Right? Yeah. So then, you know, then there goes my words, right?
Yep.
I'm not going to wear earrings that'll hit my face while I'm talking, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's why I kind of keep this haircut.
Yeah.
You know, so that it just kind of stays, you know?
Yeah.
I agree that right now we live in a time where that's going to happen, that, you know, young women are going to be judged. They're not, they're going to get in their own way. They're going to limit themselves because of these social conventions. But there are social conventions that have fallen because they don't make sense anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, if we're talking about clothing, there was a time when women weren't allowed to wear pants.
Yeah.
And if you talk to the people from that era, they were entrenched in their views about why women shouldn't wear pants. Mm-hmm. And we don't understand that anymore.
No.
I mean, we cannot even put ourselves in that mindset, right?
Absolutely.
And so this generation, you know, for them, they seem to say that I can dress how I want and it doesn't mean I can't do the job.
Right.
I'm still capable. I can still prove that I'm capable. Now, we may be skeptical because we're of a generation where we've had to go through so much. We know how the world works. We know how women are treated at work. But I wonder if, like, club wear is what pants were 100 years ago.
Here's
or
top
wear, like, there's another generation.
I'll give you an example. So we just watched 10 days of the Queen's funeral and the processions.
Yes.
I was covering it along with a lot of other great journalists at CTV.
Yes.
Does anybody want to see me and my cleavage while I'm talking about the Queen? Does anybody want to see that? Does anybody want to see me struggling with a tight skirt as I'm talking to a historian about the importance of this woman and her family and watching her children stand around her coffin? Does anybody want to see me in my club gear then?
No.
Like,
I say we change.
There's a time and place for everything, and I just think, why your club gear? Why not your relaxed gear? Why specifically the gear you put on to, like, tantalize a man
at
a club?
She's going to work. You're comparing work to a funeral.
But my work is covering a funeral.
Right, but that is the content, right? That's the content. You were covering a funeral. What she's saying here is, I'm going to work. I'm not going to a funeral. I'm going to a place where I want to be confident. I want to be in my best position, and I want to be celebrating my abilities. We don't do that at a funeral. A social convention is that when you go to a funeral, the main thing is to mourn.
Mm-hmm. So you pick the outfit where you feel like morning, which is not club wear. I agree. But that's reality not the same
is, the reality is, as a news anchor, the news changes by the minute. So it could be a funeral one minute, then it could be a car crash, and it can be a politician giving.
That's the reality.
It's not just an office job. If I'm going to an office job,
and the office job happens to be deciding on marketing campaigns for clients, that is, then I don't think that from 1 minute to the next.
But what happens when you meet the client?
Thank you. The client walks in.
You're going to depend. It's going to depend on if your client runs a funeral home, then fine.
No,
you're
not going to wear your clothes.
We have these social
if your client is about party venues, if your client is about a clothing store, or if your client is a floral store,
but if I'm the client, I'm going to spend $150,000 or more, maybe it's millions of dollars I'm going to invest, and this is the first person I meet at that company,
I might not. Because the thing is, for me,
that's great, but here's we're talking about the reality of corporate.
What am I missing? Like, what talent am I missing if I'm so short-sighted that I'm going to judge a woman?
But are we going to pretend we're not visual people?
If I'm hiring somebody, I think so. I think we're visual, but our visual impressions are determined by social convention and these like antiquated preconceptions that have been handed down
to us.
Sure,
but I still don't want to see your left areola at the meeting.
Ataka, do you have a major takeaway from this conversation?
I wish I had a job that covered funerals more. I did not know that I could do that. And I don't know what I would wear. You know, I would probably go lower. What if we change what club wear is? Maybe that's what we need to do.
Oh, I think that, yeah.
Maybe that's a whole
that might even be harder. That might even be a harder fight.
Yeah.
That's it for this edition of The Social Podcast on the iHeartRadio Candidate Network. We hope you had as much fun as we did. And remember, the conversation continues on The Social weekdays at 1 p.m. on CTV. Join us.
Subscribe to The Social Podcast so you don't miss a fiery debate. Until next time, socialites.